this is obviously not the I don't know what you call this, a professional time. This is garbage time. You guys are sports guys. That's like when somebody's in penalty. No, that's
garbage time at the end usually, but close enough.
It's garbage time at the beginning.
Maybe you don't like talking about when you get wrecked, but you should have told me that you were thinking about switching decks. Remember how you said you loved diversity? We've already got a doomsday player, and that player is me. I know you, you're like this. When shit don't go your way, you drop your deck and change it. And I see you did. As we're sitting down to play our match, now suddenly you're paying triple black. Could you tell me where'd you get the nerve? You put Oracle's trigger on the stack. It's looking like I got completely worked, but I played it first. Word is that Doomsday has a steep learning curve. But you mastered it so much faster than me, and you know that hurt. I'm standing close to your next match just to see your fate, and watching you win through insurmountable hate. You know me, I'm like this. When shit don't go my way, I change my deck to fix it. Got any tips? It seems that I could use some help. Suddenly you're paying triple black, but I don't see a pile here that works. You swiftly put five cards into a stack. You won so fast, I've gotta say it hurts, 'cause I played it first. I played it first. I played it first. I played it first.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy podcast that's finally brought some Max into our very mid-level show. My name is Connor Mori. I'm here as always with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going?
That was another good one. You're on a roll.
Now the pressure's on. I'm going to throw in a bad one just so I can take it off. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing well. Excellent. Happy to be here on a lovely Tuesday night.
Yeah. Peek behind the curtain. I don't know if people knew that we recorded on Tuesdays and then there were just 4 days of radio silence before we got it out, but now they know. Also here as always with Brendan McBain. McBain, what's up?
Hey, Quinn. Hey, guys. Quinn, you sound healthier. How are you feeling?
I no longer have a lingering cough after my bout with the novel coronavirus. So,
good
stuff. I was feeling fine last time we recorded. I was just sounded like shit, basically. But less about me, because we have, I think you may have heard him laugh, very special guest. You probably know him as Max Storchin, or maybe as one half, the Max half of Max Min, on the Max Min blog. Max Gilmore, joining us all the way from California. Thanks for coming on. How's it going, Max?
Hey, it's going great. Thanks for having me. It is an honor to be here. So thanks for inviting me on.
The honor is all ours, I assure you, my friend. we are obviously going to dig into just a ton of stuff with Max and obviously his expertise in Legacy. But before we do that, let's jump over to Jeff and you can show us your expertise in cleaning house.
Oh yeah. So just one event, the same event we talked about last time. Mox is having a team trios event of Modern, Legacy and Pauper on Saturday, February 19th. Very cool. I don't have the prizes in front of me, but I think they were pretty decent in scaling with attendance. So hopefully that gets up there quite a bit. I know I had a few people reach out to me after the last episode to ask if we were thinking about going, to which I think for myself, it's probably a no. Still, some stuff across the border is a little sketchy. I don't know, but super cool event. And if you are willing to cross the border or you live in, the Seattle area, absolutely check it out.
I just love that Pauper is part of the the trio format.
I know, right? It does feel like the closest in like gameplay style.
Yeah, it's like the legacy light kind of thing. I do like you get the legacy, the older player, you get the zoomer with the modern, and then you just get the person who likes Magic, likes played a while ago, but doesn't want to spend that much money, and they get to play some Pauper. Yeah, that's just me knows, stereotyping, but
everyone knows the real zoomer format is vintage.
It's true.
It's true. Only online though. And then it's the total opposite offline.
It's crazy how much innovation there is on online vintage. It's just like, it's the Wild West compared to, if paper vintage had their way, things would just not change at all. Meanwhile, I'm not sure if you saw the vintage PTQ last weekend, the Zoomers and Newton Hang, if you know him,
mm-hmm.
and brought elves.
Yeah, I saw that.
I saw Newton post his list.
Uh-huh. I saw just the concept. It was like you play Allosaurus Shepherd.
Yeah.
And then it's like your force figures are uncounterable.
Right. It turns out the vintage decks are playing four force figures for their removal and a single like lightning bolt or something and counter spells and hope that gets there. There's no such thing as like the only way to stop a green creature is a mental misstep, and those are restricted now. So I mean, it seemed like a really cool metagame call.
Yeah, it's also just super sick when you have people that come in that like don't have any allegiance to, you know, like the Sarah Avengers or fourth Flicker Wisp of the format. They just come in and like, this is fucking terrible. Why would you play this? I'm going to play all of the best new cards. And yeah, I mean, I'm certainly guilty of hanging on to things for way too long.
Yeah, when there's no sacred cows, then it's easy to cut them.
Mm-hmm.
Make changes needed.
Vintage definitely has that vibe, especially the last few years. Like, I think Legacy, we're still kind of like holding on to a couple secret cows and the wind is blowing really hard. But in Vintage, they're just like, let's just go. Let's just go with the flow and brew whatever we brew. Mm-hmm. You played in the last Eternal Weekend, did you not, Max, for Vintage?
I did, yeah.
And I'm just going to like totally go off the rails here right off the bat. High level, like, what's your thoughts on, sell us on Vintage just briefly.
Vintage is I think Vintage has a lot of replayability for the same reason that most singleton formats do. It's a little bit of a dig intentionally, but the fact that the cards you see are distinct in a lot of ways, even though they like overlap a lot in function. It creates this kind of unique play experience that is also kind of also repeatable. So like the deck I played for Vintage Eternal Weekend was kind of a brew because I couldn't decide what I wanted to play between like the Tinker deck seemed really good. The Breach deck seemed great. I wanted to like play a Saugavan. So the deck I finally played was something I called Saugavan Tinker Breach. And it did all of it. And it was really good because it played, you know, a single Underworld Breach as if it were restricted, a single Brain Freeze. It already had the Black Lotus. You play a Merchant Scroll that can either find your Ancestral Recall or find your Brain Freeze. You have Demonic Tutor to find missing pieces. It all goes together nicely there. The Raghavan play like with the treasures work great with Tinker as well because you can Tinker out treasures.
That's so rude.
Then Saga is just, you know, incredibly good in Vintage where you just completely negate the counter magic aspect of decks. So all of this coming together, I mean, your Breach deck isn't going to be Force of Vigor proof anyway, so you may as well put Saga in there.
Just overload the targets.
Exactly. So that was fun. I ended 6-3, unfortunately, in that one, but it was good enough for... I had good breakers because I did some losing at the end, as these things go. And so I squeezed into whatever the, like, I think it was like top 32 or something.
Not bad for a non-Zoomer. So,
Boomer playing Zoomer cards.
Yeah.
All right. About the Zoomer mentality. That's the important
part. I'm young at heart.
We kind of skipped ahead. You mentioned Breach, which I think we'll have to talk about later on for sure. But when we have someone on, we always kind of want to start with a bit of an intro. The notes say who is Max. Usually we mean that in a Magic context, but you can go as deep as you want into that. But I guess to start there, like, how did you start playing Magic?
Oh, that's a good question. So in college, this will date itself, but I was playing competitive StarCraft II.
Baby.
I founded the StarCraft II team at my school. And so we were practicing, and one of the players was going to an Innistrad pre-release and asked if we wanted to come along. And I was like, oh, Magic. I used to love that game as a kid. And because I played like from when I was like 8 to when I was like 10, all my cards got stolen, or 11, all my cards got stolen by a, let's call him Friend for the sake of the story. And so then I stopped because my cards were gone, sad. But anyway, got back in with the Innistrad pre-release, and we just kind of bought boxes and drafted with our StarCraft group a bunch. I played a ton of Limited at the time, got really good at Innistrad Limited, which is fortunate because it's like one of the best, like maybe the best Limited set of all time. So
that's really a good time to come back in.
Yeah, really serendipitous there. And then from there, I kind of, when I moved back out here, because born and raised in California, I went to school in New York. My wife, Manisha, same deal. We actually grew up 15 minutes away from each other. Didn't know that at the time. But she was already working out here. I stayed back in New York an extra year to do my master's. And so when I was out here, I got a bit just kind of more into standard. I played at a local game store nearby and built up kind of a Magic, you know, standard collection, just kind of playing weeklies, grinding, doing well, playing PTQs or whatever on the weekends. And at some point got a really big standard collection, kind of like I had like a Unity standard set. I could build any deck I wanted. And this is kind of like in that like Junk Reanimator standard deck, the Thragtusk Restoration Angel.
Oh yeah.
Good times. That deck basically bought me my Legacy decks. Because one of my friends who I met out here through the Magic scene, Jacob Corey, who's one of the original hosts of Everyday Eternal. He was looking at my standard collection, and of course, you know, he has a Eternal bias, and he's like, you know, Max, you're sitting on a Legacy deck here. I'm like, no way. And he's like, yeah. So we did some math, and then we went to Frank and Sons, which is this huge kind of like game bazaar, if you will, in the SoCal area. And I walked in there with a standard collection. I walked out of there with a Jeskai Delver. Geist of St. Traft and Stifle, because my favorite interaction in the format was that you could stifle the Geist of St. Traft's Angel leaves the battlefield trigger.
Yes. Oh, man.
That's also like somebody coming from playing Innistrad Standard is like, Geist of St. Traft, obviously.
Yeah, Delver, Geist of St. Traft. I knew exactly what I was like. Yeah, let's just do this. Let's do this all the time.
when you were saying like you got back in right around that time, I actually also, I took a bit of a break at like the end of school and got back in to Type 2. And that's when I moved back to Vancouver. And I was also playing that standard set. And as soon as you were saying this, I was like, he totally played that like Geist with the pike and the whole nine yards. I was like, he was playing the shit out of that. I know it. Like, and then you said like the Reanimator, like Thragtusk. And I was kind of sad for a moment, but I'm glad to hear that you, like deep down inside, Geist of St. Traft is where you're at. So,
oh yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. You mentioned Jacob Corey, so local, well, he's not local anymore. He's, well, worldwide, he's still local. But Matt Pavlik is also one of the original people from Everyday Eternal. And he's an old Vancouver Legacy player. He doesn't get to play that much anymore, but he still goes on the show every once in a while.
Yeah, he loves his his rhinos, his sea dragons. Yeah, some of
his rhinos. He has a very well-defined yeah. brand.
Yeah. I love when Matt's on the show now because he like he keeps tabs on Magic, but he doesn't really play Legacy. And every once in a while, they'll talk about a card. Like, what does that do again? And you get this like fresh, like, what if you didn't really play Magic for 3 or 4 years and someone just read you Uro? Like, what yeah, would you
exactly? I do and, really and like just,
no, 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 that can't be right. Like, no, this is the card, Matt.
And, or Kratos playing like, it, Doomsday's playing it.
That'll be like this, like innocent, like, oh, this seems fun. I like this. Like, yeah, this is good. And you're like, no, this is the bane of all of Legacy's existence right now. How dare you? But you get this like little like informed, but also like childish kind of view of like, oh, look, a snake. And you're like, no, it's poisonous. Don't touch it. Oh, it looks pretty.
Things have changed, man.
Yeah.
My favorite, I mean, this is extreme tangent for a second, but my favorite like Pavlikism too is when we go to Mox in the last couple of years and like, you know, he'd managed to come with us and we'd be talking about, you know, what he's going to play. And we're talking about some like real like meta thing. And he'll be like, well, I kind of just want to like play Nykvit. And he'll be like, no, no. Okay. I'll play. I don't know what the other option is, like something real. And then, you know, like an hour before the tournament, he's like, I got Nykvit.
I would usually be able to convince Kobe to either play a Painter variant or Tintins as his real decks
nice.
Of choice mm-hmm. to steer him away from, you know, the true Legacy boomers just have the most wild. They've won enough Legacy matches lifetime that they're no longer necessarily invested in winning anymore. They just want to experience things. And so that's what they bring forward. And so like, kind of steer in there. How about blue red Painter? It seems like something that could be good and also get you a positive record. I mean, okay.
Once you experience the thrill of hitting like a turn one Cabal Therapy, like you can't go back though, right? Like
that is true.
Just chasing that high. What were you saying, Quinn? I got very excited talking about this.
I was actually going to share a Pavlik anecdote to say just the last time I think I remember him playing Paper Magic, he green sunned for a Thragtusk. And like, you know, we're not talking like fire era Legacy, but still like the power level of Legacy had gone quite far above that. And I just remember he was playing against Burn too. And his Burn opponent just kind of looked at him and like, was like, what just happened? Like,
better have two spears, nerd.
we kind of talked about how you got into Legacy, Max. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who's been around in the last 6 months would be like, oh, a Doomsday guy, or the Doomsday guy maybe. But what have you like traditionally played? Like, do you have a style of deck that you're kind of gravitate towards, or is it sort of like different things will pique your interest?
Yeah, so I was a dedicated Delver player for basically from 2012 to maybe 2016, 2015. At some point, I decided that Miracles was too good to not play and switched to that. And I, you know, joined the Miracles cabal, so to speak, of adding as many predicts as you could to the decks until they banned Senseless Divining Top. Those were good times. You know, I just played like 4 predicts, 3 mentors, and just had an absolute blast because your bad matchups became good matchups when you drew 3 times as many cards as they did. So that was, but you know, fair blue collection. I had just got Delver, so it was really painless to transition into Miracles at that point. Just kind of buy the cheaper staples. At some point I was also playing, you know, a good amount of Modern during this time, because when you're going to be a paper grinder, what else you're gonna do? So in Modern, I played Storm and Scapeshift. Scapeshift, I actually like the Cryptic Command Scapeshift deck. I kind of think it occupies the same space as Miracles, or did, in the sense that it's essentially like a control deck where you just like hold off, like stall their board, remove their stuff, tap their team, draw cards, blah blah blah, make land drops, and then eventually instead of Entreat the Angels, you cast Entreat the Mountains. And you win. So it's kind of, like that style of deck like really spoke to me. And so I was enjoying that. Then Sensei's Divining Top got banned. And I kind of realized that it was a death rate shaman's world and we were just living in it. And so I took my modern collection, like my Scapeshift and Storm cards, and I brought them to Frank and Sons for the second time. I made one of those big purchases and walked out with three underground seas and some bug staples. So then I.
You've made some good life decisions, I think.
Yeah, they've.
You're at least two for two right now.
Right. Yeah. As far as value of magic cards goes, absolutely. So then I, you know, slowly bought Trops and stuff and kind of had a fair blue collection. I could play pretty much any fair blue deck that I wanted to. The one duel that I had or didn't have that like escaped me is like one Bayou I just never owned. So if I needed a Bayou, I just borrow one. So I couldn't like play the Bug Delver deck then because it played two Bayous because of the Hymn to Turoks and Tombstalkers and stuff. But I could play pretty much everything else, or I could play the Stifle Bug version because that wanted to play mostly blue sources and it issued the double black cards. So I did that. And then so that was my paper collection and pretty much still is for the most part of just fair blue magic cards. And then online, I got into Magic Online around the four color Delver time. So I started playing four color Delver. I played four color Delver at GP CTAC in 2015.
Oh man, we were all there.
We were all there.
That was my that was my first what's it like on the big stage thing. I was like, I had zero buys and I was like undefeated kind of like midway through or two thirds through day one, and got paired against Ifro, and it was like a feature match and crushed him because four color Delver was broken. So that was great. Had a ton of fun there. I guess I dated the time I got Underground Seas wrong. I got them before CTAC. But yeah, that was great. So my online I got into in 2017. And on Magic Online, you know, you're not as beholden to the cards you own because things are a lot more liquid, things are a lot cheaper. So I bought in with four color Delver and basically, you know, bought the deck for $450 or whatever it was, just cash. And then just played a ton of leagues and did well in them enough to slowly build up a collection. And went outside of Fair Blue and started playing, you know, Chalice decks because those are fun too. And just kind of went, played some Steel Stompy, which we can get into a little bit more later on if you want, but I just kind of had a lot of fun with that. Had fun with just, I think of Legacy kind of like, or what I want to do with Legacy is kind of like finding different ways to climb a mountain. And if you find a particular route up, it's like, okay, this route was pretty good. Looks like a lot of other people are taking it, but let's see what else is there. So like try another route. Oh, that one wasn't any good. This one. Oh, this route was great, but I think I found the best way up it. Let's keep on looking for more things. And so that's kind of like what I like to do in Magic is just kind of keep on searching for like, okay, what's really good? What can we do with the tools we have? What's the best way that we can achieve this end goal of winning at Legacy and keep on like looking for other solutions instead of just like kind of grinding the same path over and over or same deck over and over. It's more of just kind of exploring the options available to me. And the times I would get sick of Legacy are when it just seems like every path has been exhausted and there's nothing to explore.
Yeah. Even just like looking at like your Magic Online results, like there's some spicy stuff in there. I mean, I'm looking at some right now. It's like Bant Stoneblade.
Oh yeah. Like, that Bant Stoneblade deck I played at GP Vegas in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
That was the four Deathrite Noble Hierarch deck that basically just like you go one drop into Trunei Nemesis or Leovold, and you're also playing Stoneforge Mystic on the case that your one drop gets bolted. And you know, it's just a big Delver deck.
Oh yeah, and
that thing was just unbelievably strong there. That was, I think, the best deck at the tournament too. So
I remember, I think there was some kind of like Reed Duke interview about that at the time. Is that right? I seem to remember some kind of clip of him talking about it.
Yeah, so he played that deck at Louisville, or not, it was somewhere in that area. The later on, he had cut the light at that point.
Okay.
So he wasn't playing the Stoneblade part. He was just playing pure bug to have better mana.
Right.
Which makes
Somebody
sense.
Somebody found out that a turn two Leovold is very strong.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he turns out that a great player can, you know, play a Jund deck pretty well.
You got a man, you have a Deathrite deck with like Lingering Souls in it. Oh man,
five color Delver?
No red.
Oh, sad,
but man, oh boy, three Zealous Persecution in the side. I encourage anybody to just pop open Max's profile on MTG Goldfish.
Five color Delver was my favorite crash and burn ever. I was so high on that deck. It was just like Deathrite Shaman. And then the white was basically for Stoneforge Mystic. The red was for Bolts and Pyroblasts in the sideboard. And then, you know, black was for the, you know, part of Deathrite Shaman, part of Lingering Souls. And it was just a five color Delver deck. And it was the most beautiful, terrible thing to ever exist. And it obviously played Stifle to primarily protect your own mana base, but also because you can stifle people.
The defense of stifles.
Using the mountain climbing analogy, I think this is like free climbing.
Oh yeah.
like there's no rope, there's no nothing. You're just going and it can all go wrong at any moment.
If I play this deck, it's fucking 127 hours.
Yeah, that deck, it had a lot of potential, but it turned out that it just, you know, slightly too unstable, so it lost to itself too much.
I mean, that's a good thing for a five-color tempo deck.
Fair. Very fair.
Jeff, you're going to hate this, but I miss Deathrite Shaman.
Fuck Deathrite Shaman.
It should be banned. I'm not going to argue with that. But, you know, there were the kind of, like, everyone gravitated towards a certain thing when Deathrite was around. But just the stuff it lets you do was so fun. Like, you would just see these piles and be like, oh, yeah. Like, mana base looks like a Deathrite. Yeah, it'll be fine.
I don't need an actual way to kill them. I got Deathrite. It's fun.
So
that too.
Quinn, you were asking me to sell you on Vintage. Yeah, so you can play four of in Vintage.
I see lists and I'm like, well, four Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah, there's basically an entire subset of archetypes in Vintage that are just legacy decks that are powered up a little bit with like Ancestrals and stuff, but they're just, you know, 2017 era legacy decks.
That's
like my time of legacy.
If you take that description, you have so many decks where, you know, it's you take a good chunk of a legacy deck and then you power it up with, you know, Moxes or Ancestral or Time Walk or whatever. And then the other direction, if you go in my direction, is you play like a worse version of Death and Taxes where you play cards you wouldn't even think about playing in legacy.
Like Archon of Emeria?
Yeah.
Turns out that those cards are unbeatable in Vintage.
That's so good.
Death and Taxes is overpowered when no one has removal. You don't need all these weird toolbox pieces.
That's right.
Just play creatures.
Yeah, Mother of Ruins, get out of here. Whatever, I don't need that. Like, eat an Archon.
It's closer to just like an Eldrazi deck than a Death and Taxes deck at that point.
Definitely.
Yeah, I was listening to dipping our toes back into the Vintage conversation. I was just listening to the So Many Insane Plays review that they kind of did that mashup of couple of the last few sets that came out. And after hearing Menindian just go off about Dredge and his experience playing Dredge and Grief and a couple of the other cards, I was like, man, Vintage is so sweet. Like, it's such a wild experience. Like, there's like seven or eight different kind of like routes that you can climb on your mountain. And the Dredge one is just, like, the bizarre route has, like, you've got, like, Hogak, Dredge, the Vengevine kind of style as well. Like, there's just so many different things that you can do with it. But,
yeah, the Hollowvine deck, like, even it's a bizarre path, if you will, but it's just like, it plays like a Delver deck. You're just playing these free to one mana creatures and backing it up by infinite counter magic while accruing card advantage with like Squeeze. And most recently that blue black one from Modern Horizons 2, who I'm never going to learn the name of.
Master of Death.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's right. Master of Death.
I just love the idea of accruing card advantage with those cards. Like it feels very like early Legacy days.
It feels very Strifo.
That as well. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with that.
Was that the True Hero that just, did he win the challenge the other week? And it's Master of Death.
Yeah, he did. I'm pretty convinced he should have just played Squee in that deck, but yeah, he did it with Master of Death.
You can pitch it to Forest, right?
You can pitch it to Forest, but I mean, it costs you a life every time you want to recur it. That's not good. You don't have life to give in that deck.
You just cast it, and then you get to surveil, you know. I think it's like a 3/1 or something, too, right?
It's a 3/3. It's
a 3/3? No way.
There's 3 mana 3/3. Can you imagine that kind of rate in Legacy? Surveil, too?
I need a sanity check.
Is it a 3/1?
It is a 3/1. Yeah. So, you know, you can find it with Recruiter. That's the plus.
I thought it was a 3/3. Never mind. I have no idea why he plays it.
I mean, the truth is, it's never going to be in play, so it doesn't matter, right?
No, but if you are attacking, it does kind of matter. But yeah, I just think that not costing life is probably worth it. But, you know,
Those games where, you know, somebody goes like tap 3, cast Simeon Spirit Guide. Like, that's the kind of situation you're attacking with your Master of Death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do with the game pieces you drew.
Speaking of dumping shit in your yard, can we talk about Breach for a bit? I feel like it's funny because like with COVID, it's like Breach happened. It was like the biggest deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel it got banned, so people stopped talking about it, but it was just weird. Just like in my memory, it's just this like thing happened. And it's like a flash.
It was 5 weeks long between the time that Breach got released on Magic Online on Magic Online to when it got banned was 5 weeks. And day one of Underworld Breach's printing, I was playing Grixis at that point because it looked like the right combo colors. And, you know, you have Thoughtseize or whatever. And I was getting destroyed by some, you know, four color loam deck with like Chalice and Wastelocking me and Liliana Uptick. And I was like a turn away from death. And then I drew a Lotus Petal for turn. I was just a complete locked out of the game. I had like a single island in play and I just drew Lotus Petal. I play Lotus Petal. I play Breach. I recur Lotus Petal. And then twice brain freeze myself, go off. It's over. And this was like crazy to me because it was literally the first day that this card was available online. I go to the replay section of Modo. I record it. I tweet the video. I get something like 70,000 views. and the rest is history on Breach. It got quickly moved into Jeskai. There became two builds of it. Some people, you know, played a more turbo version of Find Breach ASAP with like Enlightened Tutor. I played a kind of more controlling build with Teferi. Because I figured that it's a one card combo and it's a relatively small package, if you will, of like the cards you need to actually breach. And so you can just play it's like Jeskai control deck that just breaches and then sideboard out some to all of the breach combo post board for mentors and praise and borrowers. And so that was something insane to where I think over 200 matches that I'd recorded in those 5 weeks, I had an 85% win rate. So yeah, that was rightfully banned.
Breach was fucked, man.
Yeah.
I remember, I think there was probably one paper tournament. Was it the Harry Wong Memorial on our side? There was definitely tournament connections. And I think I had made top 8 and was playing in like the semis or something. And I'm playing against Breach. You know, I'm on Death and Taxes, and I've got them pretty locked down, right? You got all this stuff lined up. It's all prisony. Stuff's going okay. And you're like, they need so many things to win. They can't do it. I have to attack twice. I'm going to win. They can't do anything. And it's like, they just drew like, you know, fucking like an LED or something. And I was like, oh, everything else I have is there in my yard already. Perfect. Like, I'll just, you know, make a bunch of mana, canter a bunch of times. Okay, there's what I need. Boom, you're dead. And it's like, fuck. Like, you know, when you're playing in Storm, you have this view where you're like, okay, they have a number of cards and they need a certain number to do something here. So I can keep them, you know, structured here. I can make them discard. I can keep them, you know, broken on mana. But I mean, like your story, you just get the one piece you need. And like, it's a one card combo in the sense that Breach does everything. It just needs you to have done things earlier. It's very strange. And you are definitely the person that I think of when I think of who popularized this scourge.
I was also doing some silly stuff that I think was good, but I was like playing Savine's Reclamation in it as well, mm-hmm. which is the 3-mana commander card, return target permanent with CMC 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, flashback 5, and if you flash it back, it copies itself. So I was also playing that, and I was playing like a copy of Thought Scour as well, because just kind of filling your yard with cards was just as relevant as anything else. And sometimes when you're digging, you could just like Thought Scour yourself, and you're only costing yourself one card each iteration. So you could dig until you hit your brain freeze that way, like 3 cards at a time. It's kind of like ancestraling for what's relevant. And so with that, you could also just like do silly things like, okay, just like cast a few, your opponent casts several spells, like 3 spells on their turn, and you go, okay, brain freeze myself for 12. And then you're probably going to hit something, either a Breach and a Savine's Reclamation, or you have a Savine's Reclamation, you just need to mill a Breach in those 12 cards or whatever it is. And oftentimes you can even just like LED yourself, discard your hand, bring back Teferi first so that they couldn't abrupt decay anything. And then on the copy, bring back Breach and go to town.
No.
Okay. As someone who like played Vintage in like the early 2000s when it was like a Yawgmoth's Will format, and everything revolved around just like who's going to do the more busted Will. Or there was like some stacks decks and stuff, but a lot of the decks just had Will. And it was either the control deck would end the game with the Yawgmoth's Will in many of the ways that you're kind of talking about, or the combo deck would do it. And having that like ingrained into my memory of just like Yawgmoth's Will, and then you're like, oh, I just like play a whole bunch of them, and I can be the control deck and I go off. And the fact that like it's a really interesting design, like the card itself, like how it's an enchantment and how it functions that way. But when that deck came out and like it was popularized and everything, I was like, what the hell is this? Like it kind of like sidestepped a lot of like what Legacy was thinking about and just kind of fit in this groove and performed really, really well. And it felt like online was adapting to it a little bit. But paper, people were just like, is it even released in paper yet? Like it was already like refined into this like god deck online before it finally got into paper. But
I got
definitely burned bright.
I got to play it in paper once.
Mine got exactly lost once. In the mail. I was so sad. I had to email the store, and like I rarely have lost packages. Like that's one of the only times I can remember.
They knew it was getting banned. They're like, no.
Well, they were like, we could maybe send you some more. Like, can you wait a couple weeks? I'm like, yeah, I can wait a couple weeks. It's reasonable, like very reasonable. And then a couple weeks passed and it got banned. And I was like, I don't need to bother them. They could just keep Breaches. But it was also like, that's one of the decks one of the times in recent Magic history where the speed at which Magic Online moves and kind of like the slowness of paper like just was really, really evident. Or yeah, you look online and people are like, this deck is busted, like you cannot lose. And like Max, I would see your tweets or like some videos and be like, oh yeah, this is fucked. But playing in our local paper meta, because it was kind of like legal for even a shorter amount of time, and if you didn't play online, you didn't get the reps in, it felt like kind of like Miracles era to me. Like I would play and sometimes be like, oh, you play online, like you just kind of like did all the things. I couldn't really think of what line I could have taken. And then other times, like playing another combo deck that has counter magic, I'd be like, oh, well, you should have cracked that LED, but you didn't. So now, Force of Will, I'm going to do this and I kill you. That was like a really weird thing to experience. Because I remember what, like, we talked about it when it got banned, and I was like, oh, I don't think it's that bad. And you guys were like, you're nuts. But my experience was just like playing people in paper who like didn't have a lot of practice. And I was like, oh yeah, I just like counterspelled the breach and then I played Invigorate and killed them. I don't know. Seems fine.
I'm getting so many like emotions bubbling up because I'm remembering us talking about this, like, you know, the whole time. And I'm just feeling these arguments. I'm like, they have silence. Like, they'll just bolt you fucking 9 times. Like, you know, they can do it all.
Yeah, silence is great in that deck. And Teferi by extension, because it's a, you know, permanent silence. But yeah, it's funny because on paper, like when the spoilers were released, I was really, really high on Breach and talking to some of my online buddies about it. And I have a tendency overall to be hyped on cards that don't quite make it, because I see the potential in them and I get excited. And so I was yet again bugging Callum Smith about this. And he was like, Max, this loses to Canonist Effects. This loses to Graveyard Hate. This loses to Abrupt Decay. This loses to counter spells. This loses to just like in listing off like literally every true statement. Like, yeah, literally everything stops Breach, but at the same time, it's weird because nothing actually stopped Breach. So
I feel like too silence. I mean, like, you know, silence has popped up in Legacy once in a while, but like silence has just kind of stuck in combo decks since then.
I've liked it in Doomsday a lot for similar reasons, because a lot of like the hate that people bring to for Doomsday is like endurance and dress down and stuff like that. And so if their hand is like, imagine a control player's hand is like, you know, a Force of Will, endurance, pitch card, and dress down. And you have like silence and a Force of Will. You silence, they might force, they might also think you don't have and be like, okay. And then you just like darker at Doomsday and then try to win in the same turn. And you've reduced all the relevant cards they have from like endurance and dress down, all these things that would prevent you from like going all in immediately, like with an LED discard your hand thing where you have exposed vulnerabilities. It's like, okay, do you have counter magic right now? Because if you don't, I win. And it's specifically counter magic. So instead of having to care about like all of these things, you have to care about one thing. And that's a lot easier to beat.
Yeah, especially with like Force of Negation in the format too. Like I've played like Silence and Omni, and it's the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Even if you're just like, great, you like pitched a card, you had to burn a force, like, sure, I'll pass. Like, go ahead. But yeah, being able to like overload their counter magic as well. And yeah, and if it resolves, you just win.
Right. And I don't know if you do this with Omni, but sometimes I get like, oh, people always just force my silences. So then I sometimes like when I don't have anything going on and I have like extra, I'll just like bluff one.
especially if I'm under pressure, like to be like, I get your hand empty. Like we need to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you have a second one, yeah.
Like think for
that
a
reminds me of. Yeah, it reminds me of the dark ritual. And they're like, they think about it and they're like, okay, resolves. And you're like, okay, go ahead.
I wanted to see if this was a duress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like, okay, you're going to be really scared of my next turn now. But yeah, like,
just film the Yard for Cabal ritual later. You can go.
Yeah.
It's silence even has more weight behind it, because like, even if you let like the ritual go or whatever, you're like, well, I can still, you know, I've got all this other stuff going on. Don't worry. I've got it under control. Silence is just like, this is the only fucking chance I have to do anything here. I mean, yeah. I never even have anything I can cast in response and I get fucking terrified.
I wasn't talking anyway. I mean, that's the Orym chant part that becomes relevant against Seth and Taxes. So then they can't attack you.
It's been many years since somebody's kicked an Orym's chant against me.
I've kicked a ton of Orym's chants in recent memory.
Oh yeah, like quote unquote secret mode when your opponent's like, oh, just protect yourself. No, no, no. I protect myself by fogging you.
It's elves mode. It's it's the mode against elves.
It's so good.
The deck most likely to kill you on the backswing with a Allosaurus Shepherd.
So why is it uncounterable?
Just and like, why is it on. Green spells? Why isn't it just elves?
Yeah. Anyways.
Why is it dinosaurs? Like there's a lot of good questions about Allosaurus Shepherd.
Well, for the longest time, I didn't realize that it only makes elves dinosaurs. I just assumed it was, green creatures, like the uncounterable part. So there's a couple games I played like Magic Online, I think with some people together when we're doing a challenge or something. And, I'm making these calculations, they're going to tag me with 10 different things and they're all going to get big. And somebody's only three of them could become 5/5s. That's after I've lost the match.
Don't get got by a reclaimer. 7/7.
Fuck. Oh, because it's base power 5/5. Oh my god.
Yeah. Another thing that Reclaimer is broken with.
It's very good. I'll play a couple copies of lands. That's really good. I actually wanted to kind of transition this here. It sounds so you were talking about miracles a few minutes ago, and this proactive kind of mentor plan that you went into, and you're like, okay, it's so good, I can't not do it. And then there's this breach, which the version that you gravitated to, and I kind of liked a lot more than the other version, was this almost control deck that had 4 or 5 cards in it that was just that oops, I win, but also you have to fear this as I'm also the control deck. So if you try to slip one past me, I'll just go off and kill you. So this proactive control deck style. And here we are at Doomsday. And Doomsday is a deck that you've really been high on lately. And in many ways, it can be this really fast combo deck if it needs to be. But in the same time, it plays this proactive control style as well. Maybe I'm kind of drawing too much of a thread here, but I think it sounds like you really like these proactive control style variants, but what kind of originally drew you to Doomsday?
That's actually, you're spot on. What drew me to Doomsday was kind of the point in recent memory when I was most down on Legacy was during the Snowco era. The Snowco deck is the only deck that actually got me to put down the format for an extended period of time. I was just not only am I not having fun, but I'm not having fun for the full 50 minutes. I'm having a miserable experience, win or lose, this whole time. I hate it here. I need this to stop. And so
we're here with you.
We should have had you as a guest a long time ago.
Yeah.
So that was the only time that I put this down. And basically I'd seen Ethan Formicello, Monkeys Can't Cry, his Doomsday list. He was playing Oracle Doomsday when the rest of us were playing Breach because he is a crazy mad genius. But and it was really just a good deck then, and it got banned. It was still not getting played too much, but still a very solid deck. And Doomsday, has, as you guys will know, there's so much air about it of being oh, when you cast Doomsday, well, someone's going to lose, might be the Doomsday player. And so this air about it being really hard to play and really challenging and punishing. And sure, a lot of that's a holdover from the Doomsday Fetchland Tendrils decks that were actually, some crazy stuff where you have to draw through your pile twice and cast Doomsday again to generate storm counts and all these crazy things. But the idea of Doomsday just kind of always scared me off to where I never tried it. And so I was thinking about I kind of want to play Legacy again, but I don't want to just play the same stuff. Maybe I'll just finally bite the bullet and learn Doomsday. And so I did. I just kind of tried it and went 3-2 on my first league with it, and I was like, this is really fun, and I can pinpoint the mistakes I made in the games I lost. And then I tried it again, and I went 4-1, and then I tried it again, I went 4-1 again, and I tried it again, and I went 5-0. And then I like basically had like some crazy record with it in my first like 30 matches. I'm like, okay, this deck is not as hard as people are making it out to be. It's like fancy Omnitel as opposed to some like mystical deck that takes years to master here. So, and I also in doing that, it did give me the same feeling that Breach did, or like the Miracles decks, like at that same, like the, you know, the Mentor Miracles decks in that sense, it gave me the same vibe. It kind of recreated that experience that I do, I guess, keep looking for, I guess, subconsciously with my, my legacy deck choices. And so from there, I've kind of been primarily Doomsday. I think that as far as Doomsday players go, I'm not even like, I'm probably like the third best max I know of. Like, not even in the top tier of like players, not even top tier of maxes. So, because like you've got like Wonder Pro and people like that, like there's some really good Doomsday players out there. And so I don't think of myself as like a Doomsday expert. I think that I'm probably the loudest Doomsday player as far as kind of just like sharing tech. And I, you know, I love to like try different ideas, and Doomsday again is a really small like package of what's required in your deck. You've got like the Doomsday is the Oracle, Ideas Unbound, Dark Rituals, one LED, some petals, and you got that whole package, and you can fill it out with whatever you want. And so there's like a billion different ways to actually build and play Doomsday, and you can keep on switching between all of them or whatever you want to play or whatever you think is well positioned at the time. And so that's exactly the kind of experience that I want as well, as like this immensely customizable deck to suit whatever you think is gonna get you those wins.
I mean, if you just click through your Doomsday results on MTG Goldfish, you have like, you know, we assume like kind of a classic Doomsday, classic Oracle Doomsday, I guess you should say, and then like Dreadhorde Arcanist.
Ooh, yeah. I did a top 8 at a showcase with that one.
And then, like, you know, you did some Esper. I haven't clicked through it yet, but I know you did some Esper Doomsday, right, with like Teferi.
Yeah.
Cast a few instant speed Doomsdays, I'm sure.
Ooh, yeah. The quick story on that one, my favorite instant speed Doomsday was I was playing against the Stoneblade deck post-war. They had sort of Feast and Famine. And so I was at a low enough life that if I cast Doomsday, it was my last card in hand. If I cast Doomsday before, you know, their turn, before their damage step, I would die. And if I cast Doomsday, you know, otherwise they just discard me and I lose. And so I needed them to attack me.
Yeah.
And still not die. So it was my last card. So with the discard trigger from Sword of Feast and Famine on the stack, I cast Doomsday.
That's incredible.
And oh my God.
It actually hit the Teferi. And yeah, that was just the tightest Doomsday win that I've ever had. I went from like 3 life to 1 life.
It was just like, oh. That's sick.
Or 4 life. 4 life to 2 life. That was it.
And then, I mean, after that, I'm sure I'm skipping many in here. Just recently, you know, you have there was like a Grixis Doomsday in there, right? A bunch of Rebs or something.
Oh yeah.
And then also like the tempo with like the Hermit, like, and it's going Doomsday crazy. I mean, like you're saying, and like you're saying about Breach, it is just, you have the core of like, this is how you're going to win. And then you can flesh out everything else with what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. In the PTQ last week, I played, a Grixis tempo Doomsday deck with Dragon's Rage Channeler. And that was in Bolts and a main deck Pyroblast, because Pyroblast is kind of like this flex card in this shell of both, you know, protecting your combo and killing Murktide Regents or whatever you need to do, and through Bolts. And so that was what the red is for. I played 0 basics. I went 6-3 in that event as well. I was 13-2 in leagues going into it, so I had really high hopes. But overall, you know, a solid performance for the deck. Marcus Ewald, you know, Miracles, mm-hmm. High Tide aficionado, loves drawing cards, was recommending to me Malevolent Hermit as like a card that he's played against a little bit, like out of Sneak and Show, and it's been like really scary every time he's played against it. And then I saw that Yamayama, a Japanese player, won the Saturday Challenge with a Tempo Doomsday deck with four Malevolent Hermit. And just, do you think everyone, probably not everyone listening is up to speed on what Malevolent Hermit does, so I'll quickly go over it if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah,
absolutely. So on the front side, it's a 2-mana, 1 and a blue human wizard with an activated ability of blue, sacrifice Malevolent Hermit, counter target non-creature spell unless its controller pays 3. And then
I'm just going to pause you there. Like when, so I had to re-up on my Malevolent Hermit knowledge recently when you were kind of toting this card around the internet. And I immediately had like fond thoughts back to Spiketail Hatchling back when I played Standard like years and years and years ago. And I was just like, having a creature or an effect on the battlefield that can counter something and that your opponent is always having to do kind of calculus around, in addition to the like 4 or 5 cards in your hand, is so good.
Oh, it's incredible.
Like, that is like not to be understated at all, especially when you're like, I don't even need this other side, or I don't even need any other effects. Like I can go off and do my combo and then just have my Hermit as protection and you can interact with it. Like it's huge.
Right. Cause that pay 3, it reads like a mystical dispute or like a melee kind of thing, but as an ability, it's also says can't be countered on it, more or less.
Exactly. So it's rude.
So it's so strong because like it's fine for protecting your own stuff, but it's just really good at stopping theirs. And so, and the backside, since, you know, no recent printing would be complete if it couldn't do everything. the backside of Malevolent Hermit is a Disturb, which is basically flashback for permanents. 2 and a blue, and you can cast it from your graveyard. At sorcery speed, of course, for a 2/2 flying. And it says that non-creature spells you control can't be countered. So that's...
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. So when I was reviewing this, and I was like, I was going to go look it up, and I was like, I might as well ask, you know, the progenitor of this, or the the American progenitor of it, I guess. Some weird Japanese technology. If you use Cavern on Wizard, because you've named that with your Oracle.
Yes.
Can and you cast the Disturb.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
It's happening? Oh, my God.
You can't counter. You can't counter the front side of Malevolent Hermit. You can't counter the back side of Malevolent Hermit.
Oh, my God.
You can't counter the Doomsday. You can't counter the Temporal Masteries. And then because you still have the Cavern, you can't counter the Oracle. That is absolutely correct.
Oh, God.
It's seeing that card on the battlefield, and like unless you are like, oh, I have two kill spells. Like you just look at it and you're like, I can't let this sit here.
It's a Thrag Tusk.
And then you look at the back and you're like, I can't kill it. Yeah. Is it like, it's just this thing where you're like, I don't know how to interact with this. Like, is it better for me to leave it? I think I'll just leave it. I'll like play around it somehow. But same thing. It's not like playing around Days where you can draw your own Days.
Right. And like, yeah. Even if you're playing around it, it's like, you know, you can just sack it to try to counter something they're gonna pay for, and you're like, okay, cool, and then I'll cast it for Disturb. It feels like one of those cards that hits and then you're just thinking like there's no good way for you to try to deal with this. Like if you're overloaded on creature removal, like sure, I guess, but you're, you know, easily 2-for-1-ing yourself on this thing.
Yeah, it reads like Allosaurus Shepherd and it plays like Ura. Like that gives you a good analogy for how good the card is.
And I love the cheeky one of Unearth in there as well.
Oh yeah.
Where you're like, hey, I'm gonna go get me a Malevolent Hermit and just like bring it on in.
Yeah, Malevolent, yeah, the Unearth is, you know, gets Baleful Strix back. It's part of some like insurance and some Doomsday piles to where I'll sometimes do stuff like mastery, Oracle, like unearth as a backup, or like unearth fatal push, or like Oracle fatal push unearth if I'm like afraid of it, like a dress down, which just looks a little bit silly, but it's like, and then I'm gonna kill my Oracle and bring it back again.
I've seen it in like the consider piles too, where you know you like consider chuck your Oracle in the bin and then unearth it.
Right. So that's another clean pile, is just like temporal mastery, consider, bin the Oracle, and then unearth the Oracle. Because if you have the flip side of a level interment in play, your unearth is uncounterable. So it's just like a cavern.
So it's been mentioned a few times, and I feel like we have to touch on it specifically now. Temporal mastery. What brought you to this after so long? You know, I certainly have never seen this in a Doomsday deck until last week?
I didn't come up with it. True Hero, who, you know, our master of death himself, Italian mastermind. He came up with a approximate shell of this deck and posted a 5-0 about a week ago, more or less. And he was playing two temporal masteries, and I was like, that's genius, because not only does it like work with the tempo plan, because if you temporal mastery with a Murktide on play, they're dead. Just straight up, it's over. But like, so you know, your temporal plan just randomly wins you tempo games out of nowhere. But also in the Doomsday pile, if you stack a pile of like temporal masteries, you beat the whole Breacher effects like Narset and Leovold's, all those things, because you're not drawing more than one card a turn. And then temporal mastery exiles itself, so you still have this graveyard with only Doomsday in it. So now imagine a pile of temporal mastery, Night's Whisper, Cavern, Oracle. So at that point, you've like drawn your two temporal masteries, you play Night's Whisper. So you've got Night's Whisper and Doomsday in your graveyard, empty library. If they endurance you, those two cards go back in and you still win with Oracle.
It's kind of sick that like, just because it exiles itself, like it's another just bonus for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I love that better. Like, in flavor, it's like one of those classic like slow Doomsday piles. You're like, yeah, I'm gonna Doomsday and win in three turns. You just didn't read the fine print, which is that it's three of your fucking turns in a row.
Exactly.
And I was more going on the Inception movie, where I was like, it's a dream within a dream within a dream. Like, that's how we're gonna do it.
I just love, like, that's going to be something incredible to play in paper when you're just, you know, you Doomsday and you're like, okay, miracle, exile, pass. Oh, miracle, exile, pass.
What are the odds?
Yeah, it turns so out good.
That miracles are pretty good in your 5-up Vampiric Tutor deck. Nevelshoot was playing Devastation Tide recently, before Temporal Mastery tech. He was playing Devastation Tide as like a miracle setup in his blue-black terms Turbo Doomsday deck, just to whatever the board is, it's gone now. So he can just like do a reset, like with a cycle or whatever, and then, you know, draw on his turn and win the game.
Yeah. Oh, so, you got a bunch of prison pieces there. Well, now I'll see ya.
Exactly. Nice Torpor Orb.
Yeah, get Torpor Orb.
Yeah, that's honestly one of the nicest parts about like this tempo Doomsday deck, is that a lot of the like hard Doomsday hate just doesn't matter anymore. Like, yeah, Torpor Orb's still like a little annoying. It shuts off Baleful Strix's draw card, which is, you know, very tragic. But as far as things go, like Murktide doesn't care. Malevolent Hermit doesn't care. You can just still beat down the same way. And it's a legitimate beatdown plan. Especially game one against Delver. I probably cavern on Dragon more than I cavern on Oracle or cavern on Wizard. Like, because they don't have much recourse against like a legitimately just like resolved Murktide Reach in game one.
Yeah,
game
like two, the ones are playing Mandek Pyro.
Yeah.
Which, they can't beat it, right?
And they basically play like 0-1 of those. So, yeah.
And you got your misdirection ready for it when it happens.
Oh, yeah. Got one misdirection ready.
That warmed my heart when we looked at the list before we started. I'm like, oh, when's the last time you misdirected a kill spell?
Oh yeah, should we like read over the list real quick for
yeah, sure,
the listeners? So it's 17 lands, four underground seas, two islands, one swamp, one cavern, and the rest fetch lands with four polluted delta. And then I'm playing four pieces of fast mana, which is I'm doing a split of three Dark Rituals, one Lotus Petal. The reason being is that Dark Ritual is only good for pretty much Doomsday. Meanwhile, the Lotus Petal you can play out early to like play around opponents' dazes or hold up Malevolent Hermit activations. And then I've got nine cantrips, the four Brainstorm, four Ponder, and one Consider. I've got the one Unearth. And then in the two drop slot, I have four Baleful Strix, four Malevolent Hermit, three Daze because I cut one for Misdirection, one Night's Whisper, and one Thassa's Oracle. The three drop slot is four Doomsdays and one Liliana the Last Hope. Five drops are, you know, not hugely cast for five, but four Force of Wills and a Misdirection. And then the seven drop slot is four Murktides and two Temporal Masteries.
Well, no, just six cards in the seven drop slot.
Exactly.
Secretly, so the two drop slot. But
Oh yeah, they're all actually twos. Sideboard is pretty easy. It's four Ley Lines of the Void, two which do come in against Delver. By the way, the plan is to cut Doomsdays and basically become a blue black control deck. Two Plague Engineers, two Thought Seizes, one Duress, two Fatal Push. And then blue cards, two Force of Negation, one Brazen Borrower, and one Stifle. Because Stifle, the main reason it's there is because there's a lot of cards that quote-unquote Doomsday can't beat, such as Ipnu Rivulet.
Dress Down.
Yeah, Dress Down. This one doesn't actually stop, but like
it does stop Endurance. It doesn't.
It stops Endurance. It stops Thran Foundry, that one mana artifact that people keep on getting off their Urza Sagas. You know,
you're naming all, like, as a lands player, you're naming like all the cards I want to play against. You're
digging into the secret
Nimble,
tech.
Nimble Obstructionist. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen you playing
Legacy
it, but I love it.
In a long time.
Yeah, some people really hate Doomsday and play Nimble Obstructionist.
It's three mana.
It is, but it's also, they just like hold it up. I don't know. I don't make their decisions for them.
Thran Foundry, like that's like that is ancient.
Exactly. Or like Cephalid Coliseum. People play that. Like Dredge obviously plays it, but like sometimes those like Dak Fade Index still play it too. Like because if you have like a whole Reach Room play or Narset, you can just like get your opponent. So anyway, all those cards are basically cards that Doomsday air quotes can't beat. And so I like to have one Stifle I can put in my pile to beat those cards. Because, I mean, just put it in your pile and it's there.
I was going to say, I love that in Doomsday, you're like, oh, you only have one. Yes, and it will be there when I need it because of the card Doomsday.
Exactly. And it's also fantastic at, you know, just stifling a fetch land because you can still just do that just as well as anyone else.
Also, like, you could do it and still get into your Doomsday pile, which is like the other beauty of Doomsday. You're like, yeah, I'll just burn this now. It'll come back.
Exactly. It's there when you need it.
To ask about my least favorite card in the deck.
Oh, which
hasn't been in Legacy for a long time.
Liliana the Last Hope?
Liliana the Last Hope. I saw you talking on Twitter about some like downtick Liliana piles to like get Oracle, which is like also super sick. Like, is that kind of the main intention for it to be in here, or is it also just like a miser way to like kill, you know, or stabilize against things?
It's a few things. So if you're playing some Dark Rituals, you need something else to Dark Ritual out. It's a great thing to Dark Ritual out. If you're playing a single, it's the only removal spell in the deck. And so if you're playing a removal spell, it may as well be one that you can recur.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a continuous removal spell. And then on top of that, it, you know, regrows your Baleful Strixes, your Malevolent Hermits, whatever. So it fills your yard for Murktide. It does a lot of just like nice things for the deck outside of the Doomsday pile. And the Doomsday thing you're talking about, just for everyone, is the -2 ability mills two cards, and then you can return a creature from your graveyard to your hand. So you can just, you know, do a couple Temporal Masteries and then draw the Cavern of Souls as your third card down, -2 Liliana, mill Oracle and whatever else, doesn't matter, grab Oracle back to your hand and just Cavern Oracle.
This is some fucking galaxy brain shit here. I love it.
on top of that, she's also just a pet card. So like,
yeah,
take that justification with the knowledge that like I am justifying playing this card.
Right, right. There's a certain bias for sure, but and this has always been true, like since Weatherlight, basically these Doomsday decks that it's like, oh no, it's like the what's that meme from Always Sunny in Philadelphia where the guy's got like all like the lines and like the murder mystery behind him, and he's like, I've got it, like don't worry, like
who's Pepe Sylvia?
Like that is the mind of a Doomsday player. Definitely before Oracle, it was always the mind of a Doomsday player. They're like, no, hear me out. Like
they look kind of like that too.
So I'm gonna I'm thinking back, like this is years to Vintage where it was the what was the Forge or the Beacon card that you would like storm several times with Mind's Desire on top?
It was from the energy card, right?
Sorry?
It was the energy card?
No, this is
gain a life?
No, it's from like Judgment.
Wailed.
This is before my time looking at Doomsday. I've argued many a Doomsday pile, but it's usually with like Lab Man.
It was like when you cast it, it's like deal 5 to someone, and then when you cast it, put it back in your deck.
Oh, from OG Mirrodin, right? It's Beacon of something. Yeah,
Beacon of something. And then except you would Mind's Desire it. And so each time you would resolve Mind's Desire, you would cast it, deal them 5, and then it would go back to being the one card in your deck, and then the next Mind's Desire copy would resolve, and then you dump them for 5 again, and like, but it, so it was just like Beacon of Destruction. Thank you. But that's the one thing I always loved and appreciated about Doomsday is just like these really wild, crazy lines. And when Oracle came out, like we'll be have it on record, I was just like, you know, I just love it when Doomsday is playable in Legacy and it's just a deck. Like it's super cool. There's always cool and interesting things. And to hear you talk about that Liliana line where it's just like, oh yeah, this is something that you can do. And then the fact that it like mills 2 and brings the card back for you, it's just like, oh yes, like it takes me back. So I'm always excited to lose to Doomsday when there's cool things going on.
Liliana Last Hope just kills dirtily decks too. Like they don't have to have creatures. You just take it up and ultimate, and then what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's also a threat in that sense.
I love the idea of like, oh, like they're a few turns away from ultimating it, and you're like, eat temporal mastery, noob, and then you just ultimate it like 3 turns later. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go, and then off you go. But yeah, super sweet deck.
Yeah, it's a blast to play. It's super good. Right now, I've played 3 leagues with it, and I am 13-2. My 2 losses have both been to Blue Red Delver, but I'm also 4-2 against Blue Red Delver. And I can pinpoint my losses to game 3s where I keep a single non-basic land with a single Ponder. I miss. I get wastelanded. I don't find a land and I lose. And I'm never going to learn. That's always just going to be part of, I'm always going to keep those. I'm always going to get wastelanded. I'm always going to lose. It's like, I would get better if I learned, but I won't. So
that's just, to me, is like classic Legacy though.
But yeah.
You open your hand deck, up and you're like,
yeah,
I got a Ponder. What are they going to wasteland me?
Yeah, exactly. It would be fine. What's the worst thing? I don't want to mulligan.
I played a game against Doomsday 2 days ago, and I was playing, you know, the Saga Death and Taxes, and from our side, like the matchup's terrible, you know. So like the cards you're bringing in are like, you're cutting useless cards and you're bringing in cards that don't even like win the game. They're just like kind of fuck with something. So I got like 3 surgicals, and like I kept the hand that like had 2 surgicals and like a wasteland in it, and I was like, oh yeah, let's go. So, you know, they got an underground sea, waste it, surgical them, get those underground seas out of here. You know, they cast something, they like crack a fetch, and they cast like a thought seas, like, fuck, fire off the next one, surgical your fetch land. And like I lost that game because I had no action aside from just ripping all their lands up and then like nothing going on. But that was a sick game.
You had to save it for a pedal. I'm surgical their pedals. Yeah, that's honestly, I think, one of the most frustrating parts about playing against Doomsday is there's so many cards that are like necessary but not sufficient to beat it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, just it falls into like almost the same category as like Breach did, where like so many things you can do to try to hate the deck or whatever, like they're not really on a time constraint if you don't have the pressure to back it up. You know, like I can spend all the time I want lining up down on Torpor Orbs or other shit, and like, you know, you can play the control game and win with Murktide Regents or whatever else. So it's really difficult to try to effectively hate out, because you can't just kind of like, if there's so much storm around, you're like, okay, I'm gonna play Mindbreak Traps, right? I'm gonna play a bunch of like Veil of Summers. Okay, there's my plan for that. But Doomsday is just so hard to beat, especially when you can chuck all this other stuff in.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if people started playing like Fractured Sanity or Archive Traps in their Death and Taxes sideboard. Or Curse of Silence. There is a time at my game store when I was just playing a ton of Doomsday every week, and the Death and Taxes players, they were all packing 4 Curse of Silence in their sideboard. So, you know what? I'm going back to playing some Blue Red Saga Van for a few weeks just to keep people honest. Yeah, it's a deck that in that sense is interesting to has an interesting play dynamic with it. Like in the actual games, it's a cool back and forth, because I mean, playing a card and being like, okay, I win now, isn't super fun for like as far as like creating unique storytelling game experiences. So that part's good. It's just also, you know, keeping it in check. And honestly, with Doomsday, the biggest weakness is you lose half your life. Like even like a little clock becomes a pretty big one, especially in like more traditional Doomsday builds with like a ton of cyclers and whatever. Like if you think about it, like 14 life sounds like a lot of life until you realize that post Doomsday that's 7, which is like a hit from a Delver plus a bolt that plus like a Fetchline Cracker or a Force of Will. Like that's 7 damage right there. Like, so it doesn't take much to deal that remaining chunk. And it's pretty scary if you're on the Doomsday side about like these life totals that look cushy before you cast Doomsday and get dangerously low after.
Some of my favorite like Doomsday matches are ones where, you know, they're forced to go for a bit of like a slow Doomsday, and you are then either putting off mana or some way to try to like interrupt it. And there's that real tension where, you know, you're racing as fast as you can, and you're, you know, they are hoping they planned appropriately with the extra lands in their deck or whatever to make up for the hate you can, you know, provide. It's, you get a lot of interesting games post Doomsday resolving.
Yeah. Like against Death and Taxes specifically, it used to be a thing, like say the Doomsday player's on the draw, like the D&T player goes like land go or land vial or whatever. And then Doomsday player goes like land, Doomsday, Dark Writ, as Doomsday has want to do. And they're down to 10 life. Traditionally, you could do something like fetch land, Oracle, Island, Island as your pile. You draw fetch, play it, draw fetch, play it, draw Oracle, crack both, play Oracle, no library. Hey. But now it's like turn 2, Stoneforge, find a Cauldra, beats that line. Because Cauldra hits twice before the Oracle goes on its deck. So it's like, so things get interesting in that sense. Because like, okay, well, I want to beat Thalia. I want to beat through the Labyrinth. Do I try to beat Stoneforge here? Can I? Do I have some way to like hedge? And that's always interesting to me. So
I was just going to interject and say, like, does Temporal Mastery change that at all?
Yeah. Against Death and Taxes specifically, I've only played against it twice with the Temporal Mastery build, but both of them I've done kind of just, I haven't done super fast Doomsdays. I've done more of like some Plague Engineer stuff into Doomsday with like 3 lands on the field and basics. So then I'll just do like, I'll have my pile be something like Brainstorm or Temporal Mastery, Brainstorm, Temporal Mastery, and then something else like Oracle and another land. And the idea being is that, or brainstorm temporal mastery, temporal mastery. I guess brainstorm's the first card. If they like port you or something, and they're like doing a port you play, then on your next turn, essentially you can brainstorm in your upkeep to get the miracle done early with basics. At that point, their ports are tapped, and you can then go off cleanly.
So good.
As you take more turns. So the temporal mastery does make it easier in that sense because your lands untap.
Listeners can't see this, but Jeff's face wincing when you said that, Max, was like, it was that like Simpsons moment where he's like, you can see his heart break right here.
He even did that when you said plague engineer. He was already like,
yeah, it was great. Highlight of the night.
Yeah, I just put two temporal masters into my cart on face to face.
Nice. Yeah, I just got two of my temporal masteries in the mail today. I have a third one on order.
I sent Max a screenshot of, this is some inside baseball, but Dylan in our Slack saying, looking for a deal on 3-4 ... temporal masteries.
If you look at GoatBots right now on for Magic Online, the card has spiked from like 20 cents to $1 in the past few days.
You ever like buy a whole bunch of these things you're going to put in a Doomsday deck, like buy like 30 copies and then just start 5-0-ing and then sell them on high?
No, that would be really smart of me. But no, I instead, I 5-0, I get excited. I tweet about it. It spikes and then I buy it. Like, oh, should I have to buy these cards now? Should have done that first. But yeah, I unfortunately, or for better or worse, don't play that way. I buy the cards like everyone else does.
A man of the people.
Yeah, wait till the cards spike and then buy them after I hype them.
Oh, I love it. What a sweet deck. And like, I think everyone who hated Murktide Regent,
mm-hmm.
or just despises it, or like, I'm never going to buy Murktides. They see this and they're like, it's almost like this little cute little dragon thing. And they're like, oh, look at that. I'll play that my Doomsday deck. Like, it's so maybe just talk a little bit about this, like in terms of like the beatdown plan.
Okay.
In the deck. Like, I know you kind of posted a recent thing of like, hey, I just played in the challenge. Like, here's all my men. Like, I was surprised at how many had the word beatdown in it in terms of wins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this just like counter, Dirtle, play Murktide, kill you? Like, is that what's happening?
Well, that was the one that you're referencing was with the Grixis build, where a lot of them were like turn one DRC and into like a turn three Murktide followed by a time walk and then they're dead, or even without a time walk. Just like beat down that way and counter your stuff. Or one of my favorite wins was a combination of, it was against the 8 cast deck, and they had the Thought Monitor in place so they could block the Murktide. So I'm essentially dead if they untap just off of their like saga tokens. And so I have a DRC and a Murktide. I miracled the Temporal Mastery. I play it. I attack with Murktide. They block because they take lethal if they didn't. And so they're still fine to win. But then on my turn, then after that, I blow a cantrip into the chalice they had in play and then Doomsday. And Doomsday, you know, in addition to all the other stuff it does about stacking your library, blah, 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 exiles everything else. So the instants and sorceries are leaving your graveyard to go into exile. And that triggers Murktide region, triggers Murktide.
Oh my God.
You can basically just like create giant Murktides by exiling your graveyard with Doomsday. And there's also a few situations that didn't come up with the Grixis build, just I don't think for any reason other than just like sample size, but have come up with the blue black build of I've had to pitch Oracle to Force of Will to not lose, but I can just make my pile something like time walk. And then just like another Doomsday at the end, it doesn't even matter, but just like the time walks plus the board I have in play, stacking them over and over, just wins their combat.
Just get them with the flying Malevolent Hermit, just two.
Yeah, a pair of those is, I mean, 4 over 3 turns is 12 damage.
I love all the like secret, maybe is overstating it, but all like the secret Murktide lines.
Mm-hmm.
What's like the Tarmogoyf flavor? Like whatever doesn't grow dies, or whatever dies grows a Tarmogoyf, or whatever exiles grows your dragon.
Yeah, Murktide is sweet. It's also nice. I don't think the deck can afford it. Maybe it can as like an extra land, but Mystic Sanctuary. Mystic Sanctuary grows Murktide Regent, which I'm sure Delver players know and love. But yeah, that's just another sweet way to do it.
I definitely saw a screen cap of that a few days ago, where it just had like this block happening, and then there was like an arrow pointed to the Mystic Sanctuary.
Well, like last cast, we talked about dredging loam too. Yep. Like you cast loam, it doesn't work. You dredge loam though, and you get a +1/+1 counter.
If you really want to go off, just play like loam and play Raven's Crime. Because every time you cast Raven's Crime from your graveyard,
yeah,
with your trace, it's leaving the graveyard. It's going to the stack. And so each time you're doing that, you're pitching your lands and growing your Murktide. So loam, Raven's Crime is just the best Murktide combo.
How have I not seen this in a Pokemoki deck yet?
He did that.
Murktide, Raven's Crime?
I think that's where I saw it.
Yeah, I told him about it
a
couple months ago. So I'm glad that he has done it. He was like, I'll get right on that or something. Yeah, that's good stuff. As Doomsday players. or I guess those Murktide players always looking to grow Murktides. I was playing my graveyard hate piece of choice in Sagavan was Relic of Progenitus instead of Soulguide Lantern. Because I like to make my Murktide as big as possible. And it's like an onboard combat trick too. Because like you just like there you attack with their 8/8 Murktide into your 8/8 Murktide, you block and then you grow a card from your graveyard. And it's like, okay, mine's a 9/9 now. my record is a 17/17 Murktide.
That's terrifying. I know even just playing as Delver all the time, it's like they cast one Murktide as like a 5/5, and you're like, oh yeah, no problem. And then they cast the second Murktide that same turn, and you're like, oh no, this gigantic Murktides.
It's like a pseudo haste on your like subsequent Murktides.
Yeah.
What's the Black Fling called again? That
Depth Rite of Consumption.
Plays? Yeah, now that would be spicy.
The Fling Murktide.
That's yeah. Let's put it like 3 deep in the Doomsday pile.
Yeah, and then after you've like you have to put it into like your other Doomsday pile once you like re-Doomsday and really grown the Murktide. And then they're like, oh, like I can't even stop it. Your stupid hermit's protecting it, like. Yeah.
That stupid hermit's the best part. Speaking of stupid cards, though, do keep in mind as you build piles and play this deck, because Teferi is everywhere right now, you can't miracle Teferi in play. So be conscious of that if you're playing this deck.
Another good thing about paper is because you can see the overconfidence in somebody's eyes as they go to their draw step. They're like, look at the card I drew. And you're like, that's a nice card you drew.
Goes into your hand. Yeah.
But you can use Malevolent Hermit under Teferi. You can activate it to counter spells. So
good.
Oh, okay.
Little here, little there.
I thought you were like somehow resolving the miracle still. No, I don't think you are.
No, you can't. No, like the time walk doesn't work, but Malevolent still works. You can still.
I would be the guy with the Teferi playing directly into that too, being like, oh, I can't count my stuff. Oh, no.
It really flips the matchup against the Daybreacher deck. I don't know if that's what people ever call it.
Yeah.
But like that traditionally, like for the regular Doomsday builds, like Delver's always been a bad matchup. It's like the bad matchup for Doomsday, and it's the reason to not play Doomsday is because Delver's like 20-30% of the field, and then your non-blue matchups were good and your control matchups were supposed to be good. But then when the primary control decks turned into a pile of Teferis and draw limiters and like instant win the game combos that shut you down, the control decks became a bad matchup too. And that's actually what like turned me off of traditional Doomsday right now, or got me to play Doomsday piles with 6 pyroblasts in them. Like either or, right? So
I do like the going around, like trying a different route rather than like playing that arms race of like, oh, well, if you're going to counter this, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. Like when you can sidestep things with the hermits and the Murktides, like I think it's a great plan.
And balancing those two game plans, I think, is like really fun, replayable magic. Of like, instead of just trying to do the same thing over and over, like, I'm not sure if any of you played the Grixis like Phoenix deck from a couple years ago.
Not us, I don't think, but we definitely have some people in the meta that played it. So okay, a little bit of familiarity seeing it.
If anyone listening played that deck, this, and remember how much like that deck was a ton of fun to me, just like balancing the kind of fair tempo plan with the combo. And this tempo Doomsday deck feels like occupies the same space, except the fair plan is stronger and the combo plan is stronger. So it's just like really good. So yeah, that's as far as replayability, like I can see just like picking this up and just, I have no interest in putting it down anytime soon.
I was going to say, like, circling back to something you said like so much earlier about like how you try to play Legacy or Magic and like finding a different like path up the mountain. The movement within Doomsday itself feels like, you know, you have people waiting to fucking get you on one path of the mountain, and they're just standing there looking out for when you're going to be coming. Meanwhile, you're coming up the backside, and then like, oh, that prick went up over there this time. Let's get him on this angle, and then, you know, you've circled back around. So yeah.
People sometimes reach out to me asking for sideboard guides on Doomsday, and I give them stuff I have for like main like bigger events and stuff, and I bother to make them, but like, for the most part I don't play a 75 for more than like two leagues in a row, so it's very hard to make a sideboard guide if your deck doesn't stay the same.
You're also doing your part to like severely dilute like when MTG Goldfish like auto creates like a deck. Well, here's what an average amalgamation of something labeled Doomsday looks like.
Yeah, I have no idea what Doomsday looks like. Plays four Doomsdays.
Yeah, exactly.
And 3 to 4 dark rituals, apparently. 0 to 1 LEDs.
As someone who like kind of fell in love with Legacy playing like Infect, it's maybe like a weird comparison to make, but it feels similar.
Oh, right,
like
I see it.
You play fair until you can't, or right. You play fair until you look at your hand, you're like, oh, I don't have to anymore.
Right, exactly.
And it's like, I'll just kill you. And so, yeah, that when I was saying, like, yeah, I put, like, Temporal Masters into my card, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got most of Doomsday. Like, this is what I want to do.
And, like, against Delver, like, you cut some of, like, your pump spells that would, like, commit you to be all in. The same way, like, you cut Doomsdays against Delver and just kind of play this control deck. In the same way, like, you're like, okay, well, I'm going to hit for two unblockable, and just, like, protect it.
Yeah, I love decks where you're constantly shifting between, like, who's the beatdown. And this seems like another deck that's like the epitome of that.
Yeah, and the time walk effects randomly just like really shift who's to be done.
Yeah,
because you can be like a turn away from dying and then win before your opponent untaps.
It's beautiful. So Max, I think we can talk about Doomsday forever. I mean, I know I'm super engaged right now, but. You know, we're on the West Coast. It's getting a little late. We don't want to keep you too long. And you've kind of touched on what kind of gets your magic clock going, but what kind of keeps you coming back to this format that we all love and hate and mostly love?
that's true. So actually very recently, like while Ragavan was legal, I, towards the end of it, took a little break and was playing a bunch of Modern. I think that Modern right now plays a lot like Legacy did 10 years ago, which is, you know, a big endorsement of current Modern. Modern right now, like post MH2, looks nothing like Modern did pre MH2, which is bad for a lot of Modern players, but like who bought decks and everything. But I think it's a legitimately good format right now. Very interactive, very back and forth. And even though I like doesn't necessarily think that Ragavan specifically should get banned, I was a bit sick of just how absolutely punishing every single thing in Legacy is, which is also true. Like, I mean, Chalice is disgusting. Allosaurus Shepherd is disgusting. Doomsday is disgusting. Being, even like Thalia'd Wasteland imported off of all of your mana forever is disgusting. Like there's nothing in Legacy that's like good isn't absolutely backbreaking to your opponent. Like all of Legacy is predicated on, okay, if I let my opponent play their deck and it functions, I'm going to lose. So like, because every deck is that good. So every deck is then like built to not let their opponent play their plan. It's either killing them on turn one or just locking them out of Magic. And so I was just kind of getting a little bit, like not frustrated, but just kind of like, it just wasn't making me happy to play. It's just like playing it didn't bring me joy.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a little break from it. And then with, I think with Ragavan gone, I think it was actually retrospectively probably a pretty good ban just as far as like play patterns go, because things are a little bit less snowbally now. You can come back after getting hit a few times. And for, you know, people interested in playing Delver, it got 400 tickets cheaper. So that's good for Delver players too. So all in all, it was a probably a good move. And what keeps on bringing me back is just kind of finding it's a, you know, it's a giant format. I think that to some extent, the power and like restricted cards in Vintage crowd out a bunch of other cards that could be played in that space. So in that sense, Legacy, I think, has the largest card pool of playable cards, like as opposed to the largest absolute card pool.
Right.
And yeah. So with that being said, I think that one of the things that keeps on bringing me back to Legacy is all of the things you can do and all like the, you know, that mountain analogy, finding all the new paths. Like when I was playing Delver a lot, I put Ren and Six in it since that was printed and tweeted about that, got it popularized that build, popularized the Dreadhorde Arcanus build. Doing that, I even had a brief foray into Steel Stompy around the GP Niagara Falls era, where I was playing that on Magic Online and just not losing. I was tracking my win rates with a bunch of different decks prepping for that tournament, and basically borrowed the entire deck from Jacob Corey and filling in some blanks from like Jarvis Yu and other people who, because I didn't own any of it. I own three chalices because I had to buy three chalices because Kobe sold down to one chalice because it was restricted in Vintage. So I'm the proud owner of three Chalice of the Voids, but that's like all I own of that whole deck. And that deck, playing it at Niagara Falls, I thought it was the best deck going into it, and that's why I played it. There is a Channel Fireball article that was published after the event that was basically showing off win rates. And of the heavily played deck, or like, of the played decks, like by more than just a few people, Grixis Delver had like a 59% win rate, which is, you know, really good. And Steel Stompy had a win rate of 69.4% across four players, which nice. Is like, you know, yeah, 70% yeah. among four players is wild. And so I like that's kind of like why I like exploring all these different decks, is because like, if I didn't, there's no way, if I'm just like setting on my like fair blue plan, there's no way I'd like venture into Steel Stompy and see how that feels and like make improvements to it as well. In my opinion, like the versions that were popular around the Pro Tour, when Legacy was playing at the Pro Tour, that was sweet. Some pros played Steel Stompy and they didn't play nearly enough mana sources. And so something that I did is I basically bumped it up to the four Mishra's Factories and three Blink Moth Nexus. Yeah, the bad one. the reason being is that basically with those plus Lotus Petals, you have your deck is half mana sources, but it's also functionally like 20 lands when you need it to be. It's like the whole modal double faced land thing that's been so good in Standard. People are playing these like 30 land decks that are actually 20 land decks. And so it was the same deal in Steel Stomping. I just had this incredibly consistent shell with for a non-brainstorm deck to find the exact right amount of mana that you needed. It was something that was like insane.
I remember Greg Mitchell and some of the guys from Seattle too were like fling around with that. And it was all people who are like to get you off of blue. There must be something here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just to go back to it, I think that idea of like the mountain's big and there's a lot of paths you can find is, yeah, what kind of keeps things interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So like finding all those things, and like, even like within Tempo Doomsday now, I'm like, okay, cool. I figured this out. Can we afford to splash a color in this? Is it worth it even still with Malevolent Hermit? Probably not. What would you cut for it? Is it worth just like playing a single volcanic main and sideboarding a ton of pyroblasts? Like, just like thinking about things like that and trying to figure out, because like this deck is kind of caught on like wildfire to an extent. I played against someone yesterday, I think, and they told me that it was the fifth time they played against this deck today. So, people are, it's catching eyeballs and people are at least trying it out. I know that Kai Sawatari played it on his stream for us this morning, for him yesterday, as Japan tends to do. And he was 4-0 going into round five, where he played against the mirror, like the literal mirror that his opponent was playing. I think my exact list I tweeted. Kai ended up losing the mirror and his opponent 5-0'd. So the deck is really good. Like, so I think that people who are trying it are seeing success, and that's going to just like kind of keep the ball rolling into this deck becoming legitimately popular. And I'm also interested in like what keeps me coming back to Legacy. Okay, so if this build of Doomsday that isn't reliant on Doomsday becomes popular, does the amount of dedicated Doomsday hate go down? Does becoming a dedicated Doomsday deck actually make you favored in the mirror? If people aren't playing these like Torpor Orbs or Dress Downs because they don't interact enough with the tempo plan, can you just like play a turbo Doomsday deck and start beating all these hybrid Doomsday decks? Like, does that work? And so like that kind of, those questions and kind of keeping this ball rolling is what keeps on bringing me back to the format. I think those like really interesting questions to answer, and I don't know the answers. And so that's why I keep like trying things.
I'm pretty sure Cephalid Coliseum in your Doomsday deck to put into your Doomsday stack the after breaker. They Doomsday is probably the correct play. But
I mean, there is so on that line, like speaking of things that are absolutely devastating in the Doomsday mirror, that one little stifle. If you have a flipped Malevolent Hermit into the Benevolent Geist, I think it's called, your stifle is uncounterable. So yeah, that's just disgusting.
I was going to ask him, like, why not Trick Bind? But you don't need to have Trick Bind when you've got
Trick Bind. It only costs one mana now.
Exactly.
I did have one other kind of hopefully positive question at the end here.
Yeah. Good. Gotcha.
Yeah. No. I put those aside here. But this is something that's kind of like I encounter a lot playing old school, which is a format that I've kind of grown to enjoy. But none of us on the cast, Max, have kids, but a lot of legacy players, vintage players, old school players, like older guys are dads and have kids. And I'm just curious, like, if there's any kind of tips or tricks that you've learned that have really served you well in terms of like balancing, really getting to be able to have a conversation like you had with us tonight, where you're like, you're right on the cutting edge, you're spiking prices of temporal masteries across the world, but you're also still like balancing time with your family and work and everything like that. Is there any kind of like things that you kind of use as heuristics to make that happen?
Yeah. So a few things are, one, I think that people who don't have kids underestimate the amount that very little children sleep. So like even when my first kid, Akash, he's 4 now, when he was a newborn, I basically, there's a thing called an ergo baby, but it's just like a chest strap. It's like, you see dads carrying these babies strapped to their chests. I had one of those, and he would take his really only like nap well if he was being held. So I would hold him to my chest, bouncing on like an exercise ball, playing Moto Leagues. Like, he doesn't care as long as he's being held and bouncing. He's happy. So I could just, like, you know, basically be a good dad in the sense of, like, give my kid the thing he needs, but also still play. And now, like, now that I have a, you know, almost 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, They don't take like huge naps during the day or anything, but it's like at night they're down by a little after 7:30. And so like my wife and I will hang out some nights, like, or we're also like all hanging out next to each other, just like, you know, like time spent, you know, next to each other together is, you know, still sometimes with like active activities together. Sometimes we'll just like play our own things, and I'll just like be playing a Moto League while she's our DM in our D&D campaign we're running. So like she's like working on the next game, like next session of the campaign or whatever it is, like stuff like that. And I also think about it, like think about these kind of things a lot, like just like mulling them over in my head and kind of visualizing how games play out, which is, you know, a little obsessive as these things go, but
well, it's something to do when Daniel Tiger's on, right?
Exactly. Or like when I'm at work, because I work in an office, just kind of what I design medical devices, and a lot of like my work is hands-on, like building prototypes and stuff like that. So it can't really be done from home. And so I'm in the office and, you know, can't like squeak in a Moto League during the day as easily as some other people who work remote can. But what it, during that time, I just like, you know, I'm thinking about things and seeing, keeping the brain active. So what I'd recommend is, also I'm not like necessarily with my goals trying to win. Like I'm not trying to become the next showcase champion. That's not one of my goals right now. I know that I'm going to get like 0 to 1 shots at a weekend showcase challenge per time period. Cause like as my time goes, my weekdays, like after the kids go down, are pretty open. Like nighttime is not that hard, but an entire Saturday is challenging. The entire Sunday is borderline impossible because I have like responsibilities. Like I take my kids to like swim lessons and stuff in the mid morning. And like, there's no way like, cool, that's at round 3 of the challenge. So that, you know, those challenges aren't happening, which means that Saturday PTQ, I'm like, oh, cool, I'll try to play that. So like, I bring it up and basically set aside the time to do that. And so with way fewer shots in like big events, you can't necessarily have the goal to be like, I'm going to win the PTQ, because you have to like, even like very good, you see these great players win. But if you look down at like the O2 bracket, like at the very bottom, you'll see very good players who had bad days. And so
JPA.
Exactly. You'll see like JPAs down there. You'll see like Reduke will go O2 sometimes, like shit happens. And so like, you can't just like put all this on yourself to be like, I've got one shot at playing a competitive legacy event and I need to win it or I'm a failure or whatever. So yeah, I'm like brewing decks and kind of trying to like push the metagame forward and publicize what I am having fun with and doing well with and kind of generate discourse and kind of just try to bring everything forward. And that's my objective. And I don't need a tournament to swing my way to make that happen. I can do that on my own time. So that's kind of how I've adjusted with like being like, you know, married, parent, working full time is instead of having to like dedicate a huge amount of time to having the variance go right for you, is to try to like find stuff outside of the direct tournament success to kind of try to excel in.
Seems like it's working.
Thanks. And then yeah, with like writing and stuff, like I write on MinMax blog with my buddy Min. We both wanted to have a place to write and our names work so well together that we were like, oh, MinMax, perfect. So yeah, minmaxblog.com is where I write articles. Like one of the first things I wanted to write about, because as a longtime Jeskai Delver aficionado, people always got upset about putting Swords to Plowshares in a Delver deck. And that's never been a problem and it never will be. And so like, basically I would generally write about things where I think that people are wrong, or like, I want to like bring up a perspective and argue a perspective that I don't see being argued, because I feel strongly enough about it to write about it. And so, yeah, it's our website. We don't have any ads. We don't accept any money for it. We don't sell anything we don't make anything for it, but it also means that we're not beholden to anything. So we can just write whenever we want and publish whenever we want, which is great for, you know, Min's got a super busy work life and married life as well. So like, he has a huge time responsibilities there, and I've got everything going on. So I can't, you know, publish on like a regular schedule, which I would have to with like, if I were being sponsored by, you know, whatever third party site. So, or patrons, like if people are subscribing to listen to what I have to say, that I'm then beholden to them to say, okay, in this every week, I need to give you something that's worth your money. And the amount of pressure is not something I want right now.
That's why we've never gone down that road.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. So just a side note in terms of your writings and like kind of trying to promote things that are blatantly false. just a side piece on the whole no bad cards rug with a direct eye looking at Nimble Mongoose. What did he ever do to you? That is.
I was actually looking at Stifle.
Okay. All right. As long as you weren't looking at Nimble Mongoose, like that is a.
Nimble Mongoose is a bad card, but Nimble Mongoose was like collateral damage. Also, and then the whole no bad cards moniker, which was probably my greatest achievement to date. I think it's caught on way bigger than people listening to this NBC deck list. But it's very important to include a bad card. Like I had the blue cycling land in there. Like the taps for one color cycles for blue.
Oh yeah.
Because you know, recur it with Brennan Six and it's incredible that way. And so it's really important in all of your no bad cards lists to put at least one bad card. So anyone listening to this, if your no bad cards list doesn't have a single bad card in it, please correct that. Otherwise your moniker is not accurate.
Okay. So it's like the 61st card kind exactly. of idea. Right. Yeah.
I mean, you have to cut a good card for it. Don't play 61.
I feel like every legacy deck community, like the vast majority of decks have a flex spot, and that's like that's what brings a community together, right? Like, what's your flex card?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, do Yorion decks get two flex spots? I don't know how that works.
1.5.
Okay, I can see that. Maybe they get like a land flex and like a spell flex.
Yeah.
Jeff, where are you at with this?
Yeah. Double up on those Timeless Dragons. It's perfect. It's both. Ooh, it's a land. Yeah, it's a spell.
Oh, if we're talking about crazy Doomsday Brews that may not see the light of day, this was a Marcus Ewald inspiration. He brought up Timeless Dragon as a way to play Esper and beat Delver. Because it's a 4-mana, you know, it's a 4/4 flying. So it beats Delvers and Dyrsees. You have the plows for the Murktide. So, and it's not counterable because it's eternalized.
And
so,
you can go find like a Tundra or like a Scrubland or
exactly,
something.
So you develop your mana with it. Yeah, it's great.
This does sound like pre Malevolent Hermit though.
Oh yeah, this was like, this is ancient history. This is like 10 days ago.
Yeah. We're in the Zoomer timeline right now. Things evolve quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, Marcus is a true expert in everything Esper. And also, he was one of the most successful Breach players as well. Like, he's really up there on his combo.
I think he came on and Callum and him talked about Breach right around when it was banned, I think.
The two of them split the showcase finals with the deck. Yeah,
that was a really good episode that they did. It was really fun to, like, just hear those two minds who were, like, really high on the deck.
Yeah, they're just both incredibly smart. I bounce ideas off of them all the time. And it's good because they also like have very different reactions to things. And it's like Callum will generally, if I just throw out like a bad idea, tell me all the ways it won't work. And if I throw out a bad idea to Marcus, he'll tell me about all the ways it will work. And so I, you know, throw them out to both of them and can just make an unbiased call.
Sounds like a good algorithm. I like it.
Yeah, and if Callum signs off on it, it's getting banned.
Right. Well, I think there was that comment recently where it's like, if he tells his friend to like sell the cards or whatever, it's like, hey, should I sell my Ragavans? Banned. They sell my Murktides. Apparently those are getting banned now too. So
I mean, Tempo Doomsday is gonna throw Murktide Vision over the top.
Clearly.
Wizards is gonna see, okay, people are putting Murktide into Doomsday. Gotta get rid of it.
Just ending, because we started with Vintage, maybe we'll end with Vintage. Again, going back to that Menindian episode, they were reviewing cards from Modern Horizons 2. And it was really refreshing to hear someone who was like over the moon with excitement about Modern Horizons 2. They were both really excited about it. But how things that we think of as totally insane and ridiculous, and how could you ever print that? What awful design in Legacy? Are just kind of like, yeah, this isn't Vintage, but we'll get out of here. Like, sorry, Murktide Regent, like, what are you? Like, you're not getting played. Like,
not
maybe.
Even close.
Yeah, not even close.
Pyroblast.
Like, it's just like, Vintage plays main deck Pyroblast and all sorts of other things. But like, there was a lot of things that like, they're like, oh yeah, you know, Ragavan will see some play. Like, it's Vintage playable, but it's not like, oh my God, ban this thing. It's insane. But just how these Modern Horizons 2 cards just hit differently in the different formats.
Mm-hmm.
Like Vintage or Legacy being the cantrip format. Like there was that post the other day with, you know, when you say the same thing over and over again, it was just Ian Duke having to talk about Delver decks. And
yeah, it's like Dominic Harvey's tweet.
This Snowball League card does this. But just that variance that you can see across the formats is really neat. And like, it's a little bit refreshing when you think of like, okay, they weren't like purposely trying to make Legacy awful or anything like that. They threw a bunch of crazy cards out there, some that had more testing than others, but they just hit differently in different formats. And like you did the other day where you go and play Modern a little bit, where you get to play some Vintage and try things out. I think it's
also, I think to that end, there's nothing wrong with if you're not enjoying a format, like just take a break, play something else. There's like one of the nice parts about Magic is it's like what a dozen games under this different games under the same rule set with like overlapping game pieces. And so if you're not enjoying one format, play another. If you want to play Magic still, like there's other games too, obviously, but like, even within Magic, like, oh, play some Modern. It's like super back and forth and interactive. Oh, you're getting Modern's getting a little bit stale. You've seen Lurrus for the 100th time today. Okay, go play some Vintage. Play some. Whatever you do, don't play Arena. Like, I mean that genuinely. I would like go watch bad movies, like so bad they're bad movies with that money. It's still a better use of your time. I've sold out of Magic Arena, or you can't sell out of Magic Arena. That's the worst part about it. I have uninstalled Magic Arena. All my cost is sunk and gone forever. But it's the absolute worst way to play digital Magic that I've come across, including all of the free ones. Don't play Alchemy. Don't play Historic with Alchemy.
Historic's
cards.
Horrendous right now. It's so bad.
Yeah, but play any other Magic Online format. Play Commander with your friends, like just play, have an experience you enjoy, because even like within Magic, doing like go to your favorite restaurant and then go to your favorite restaurant 2 weeks in a row, you're going to be sick of it at the end of those 2 weeks, right? Like take variety for what it is and just have fun. And that's, I think if you have fun and overall, like you'll be more successful, just because if you're enjoying what you're doing, it's easier to stay focused. It's easier to make good decisions. Like even from a purely competitive standpoint, it's optimal to be having fun.
On that positive note, moving over to another one, Max, we always like to end the whole end has been pretty good, but sometimes Jeff and I especially get into the shit, so we like to bring it back up at the end. So we always end with a segment we call That's Gas, where we just do a shout out.
Yeah.
Jeff, did you fill Max in on the gist of this already?
Okay. I did.
We're good. So a thing usually we do, people, McBain has really pulled stuff out of left field sometimes, but Max is our guest. If you're ready, I'd love it if you wanted to go first.
Yeah. So first, obviously that's guessing for my family and you guys, family for being family and you guys for having me on. And then the the ones that aren't givens. I really want to say that's guess to like all of the legacy online community, just for being super friendly people. Like I'd like not even say like acquaintances, like friends, I feel like, who with over like several dozen people I've never met in real life. And it's all through this like game online. And that's awesome. So all these like group chats via like Facebook or Discord or whatever, like, thank you for being awesome and please continue to be yourselves. It's a really great community and I'm super happy to be a part of it.
Jeff, you're up.
I always feel like when we line this up, we should maybe shove the other person at the end because they have such a nice concise thing to complete it. Because everything Max says is absolutely true. You know, everybody on Twitter and talking about the format and just like shit posting about the format and like having fun, like it feels like a big group of people who, even if like you're not directly, you know, aware or communicate with a bunch of them, like you're kind of in the same room where the jokes are, and you know, it's a good time. I just wanted to shout out, I was having a hard time coming up with something this week. But then I remembered that some madman won the modern challenge playing crack the Earth and Mana Tithe.
Yes.
So I have to shout out Ben Ryan, who's on Twitter at Rocco, R-O-C-K-O underscore T-K. They haven't posted very much, but this deck list is incredible. And if you haven't seen it, you should go look at it because Crack the Sky is sick as hell. Crack the Earth is sick as hell.
McBain. You got, or what you got, what do you got, what do you got?
Yeah, I got a wild one this week actually. So this is something that kind of came up at work, and talking with you, Max, has really kind of brought me back to it. But I'm gonna, that's gas, a growth mindset. I know, right? And
you know what's gas? OKRs.
No, I just think it's a really good way to approach the game we all love and play, and just like knowing that like you can work hard at something but also think like deliberately about it, come up with strategies, seek input from others, and just kind of like always be seeking to improve and stuff like that, and not hanging your hat on like that one challenge you get to play and be like, oh, I need to like win or die. Like, you know, there's variants. Like I saw you had that thing of like, you know, a 4-1 is just a 5-0 with variance. Like life goes on. And just kind of having that mindset to approach life and the game we enjoy, I think is great. And that's what I'm gassing this week. Quinn, over to you.
I think we've probably done this before, but I wanted to send a shout out to our friend Rodrigo, local, I want to say like just wild brew player. But he reached out to me today just kind of to be like, hey, you still have those Wastelands you can sell me, right? And I'm like, yes. And Rodrigo and his partner recently had a child. So I don't know if we congratulate him. If we didn't, we were remiss to do that. So congratulations again. I hope this again, Rodrigo. But I think it's just one of those things where when we talk about how much we love the gathering is, you know, And Max, you kind of touched on this too. Different life things can happen. You take steps back in certain ways. You get involved in different ways. But I think the thing for a lot of the people that we know and love is that magic is just kind of always there, hovering around at some point in your life. And it just like brightened my day to have Rodrigo pop in and be like, oh, I still need those Wastelands, by the way, the Tempest, right? And like, they'd be like, yeah, buddy, I got you. Next time I'm around your place, I'll drop them off. So I just want to send a shout out to Rodrigo. Anything else before we wrap up for the evening?
Can I do a couple quick plugs?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Thank you. I post all of my thoughts, good and not, on at Max Torsion on Twitter. That's MaxTorTion. And I write better formed thoughts on minmaxblog.com. That's MinmaxBlog.com.
And to finish off, Max, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time. It was awesome to sit down and chat. If anyone out there listens to us because they want high level strategy, let me tell you, you're making a mistake. But you heard those links that Max just gave out, and that's one of the places that you should gravitate towards. Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening, Max. Thanks again, man. And we'll see you all in Two Thresholds.
Thanks. Bye. Fuck, that's your time.